Patrick Dangerfields, a little bit different this morning. Welcome to the program and congratulations as game 300 looms.
Good morning, Jared. Yeah, it's pretty special, to be honest. I'm pretty excited about it.
I feel like we should be sitting here wearing our Danger 300 hoodies, the line of merchandise that I got emailed as a club member last night.
Geez, I'm disappointed there was no Top Gun reference, Jared, but I suppose you can't have everything, can you?
It's your 300th. I reckon we should have had Danger Zone speed sign 300.
It's funny, you look back on the things that you've done sort of throughout your career in terms of media, the things that you've said yes to throughout the journey, and then you try as much as you possibly can to young recruits that come into the team and say, you can say no to the media department with some of the things that you do. I remember sitting in a room full of danger signs in Adelaide, and I look back now and go, what were you thinking? This can only go one way and you'll have the absolute Mickey taken out of you. So you can say no.
It is the game's big milestone. I've long believed that. Does that occur to you this week?
Yeah, it does. I had a really wonderful coach growing up, Leon Harris, who you know, heavily involved in the AFL industry, and he was my under 16 Victorian coach. And I remember him talking about this was before the side was fully picked, but it was down to the last 30. And he was speaking about, he had Drew Petrie come in and talk to us. And he was talking about you've made it when you've played 100 AFL games. That's when you've truly established yourself as a player, and you've shown that you've been able to go the distance and make a mark on the game and be good enough to play. And that always sort of rung in my head around where the benchmark's got to be. But it's funny. I always thought, 300 would be something magical.
So you played with Andrew McLeod and Tyson Edwards really early on, who were 300 gamers. What did they have an aura about them?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly Andrew. And I still speak to him to this day. Incredible player. Just this calmness about the way that he would play, about the way that he would glide seemingly over the field. Terrific to talk to, in the sheds. But he did and still does. There's a part of that. Like, it's quite amazing, really, Adelaide. You know, throughout my time there was four players that had played 300 games, and I think at the time Melbourne hadn't had one player that had played 300. So it shows that it's a tough thing to do.
If 100 is establishing yourself as a league player, what is 300?
I think there's plenty of players that haven't played 300 that are just really unlucky, to be honest, because of injury and how difficult it is to, I suppose, stay at the top for a long period of time. I think the challenge for so many in the game, as much as the physical aspect is difficult, it's the mental challenge. But it's one thing that I haven't experienced at Geelong, and obviously played the first half of my career at Adelaide, but the mental load here, it doesn't exist. I think it's almost an unspoken sort of truth in the Geelong building that, you know, we can't have players hanging up the boots because mentally it became too much. It should be physically just not capable anymore, but should love rolling into work every day. And after 15 years, that still rings true to me walking into the doors of GMHBA. And, that's such a critical part, I think, of longevity in the game, enjoying what you do.
How vivid is it at the start? So I was looking back at your draft. So you go 10. So Cruiser, long retired, Cochin still going, Marston, Morton, Jared Grant, Myers, Palmer, Henderson, who you end up playing a little bit with, and McAvoy, who's about to retire. So you and Cochin are the two survivors. We think Trent's going on, and obviously you're nowhere near the end. Well, it's always an interesting batch to look back at as to what you came through with.
Yeah, it is. And there was a, I mean, he was an okay player. I think his name is Cyril.
Yes, just behind you.
Was pick 12. Anyway, I didn't do much throughout his career, but he was okay. Yeah, you do. And I remember the under 16 championships. I remember standing next to Trent Cotchin in the wet at Princess Park. Actually, no, it was Victoria Park. We had, you know, these Victorian Guernseys that were honestly, this was 15 years ago, more, and they were at least 20 years old. Like, I don't know where they'd come from. Standing on him, he pushed off, snapped a goal in the wet, and I was like, geez, this guy's unbelievable. Go to the championships and watch Vic Metro versus Western Australia, and Metro have got this kid, Daniel Rich, who's had 30 at halftime. Tom Swift was in that team. He'd had 30 at halftime, and he's playing against, you know, Cotchin, who's, it's almost like Cotchin versus Western Australia. And you look back through those times and the players that you come through with and those that go on to have successful careers. And it's pretty special. You know, it's such a fortunate thing to be involved in the AFL industry in any capacity, but to play, it's been an absolute privilege, to be honest.
Did you know you were going to Adelaide on drafts? Would it have been day or night at that stage?
It was draft day. I did. I had three different meetings with Adelaide, and the last meeting that I had with Adelaide, Matt Rendell came to our house once again, and it was sort of odd. It was like, all right, another meeting, and he rocked up with a six-pack. So I think he was pretty relaxed by the time that he got to the house. And then we asked, like, so where do you think? He's like, well, we're just going to pick him with pick 10. So that's what's going to happen, and there we go.
What was Mum's reaction knowing that you'd be across a border?
Oh, they were pretty stoked, to be honest.
Yep.
I remember reading an article by Robert Walls, and it was about Neil Craig, and it was along the lines of, you'd be happy for your son to go to Adelaide being coached by this man. And still to this day, so many incredible lessons as a young adult, or teenager, not adult at all, around what it takes to be good, what it takes to perform, and the professionalism that's needed in order to be successful. And still so many, you know, lessons from those early years around professionalism, what it takes to be good, around being resilient and pushing yourself further than you think you could ever possibly go. So, yeah, I wouldn't change a thing. I absolutely love my time in Adelaide. Neil was such an important, person in my career in my early days, and I think you'd get the same response from, you know, other players that came through around the same time as me. Sloane, he was obviously one of them, around what you learnt from someone like Neil.
So it's round 20, 2008. It's at Docklands, and it's against Essendon when your time comes, so the middle of August. So these days, these things are all kept for posterity, as you're told and you tell your parents and all. What are your memories of the build up to it and then the reality of it?
Jared, I spent the whole week, I was finishing school at this stage, so yeah. I spent the whole week at school. My training for that game was at Highton Reserve in Geelong with the Geelong Falcons. I didn't meet up with the team until Friday afternoon when they first got in. So it just wouldn't happen these days. And I look back thinking, God, I can only imagine what the players were saying behind closed doors when you pick someone that just has not been with the team at all. And then, you know, get there Friday night. It was back when you played and you started on the bench. You were on the bench. Yep. You were going to be there for a while. Yep. There was none of this, rotations and get speed on the game. So I remember rocking up there, and then the game was at, I forget what it was called at the time, it's Marvel Stadium now. And it was the first time the Crows had beaten Essendon in Melbourne, I think in the existence of the club. So I think it was a 35-point margin in the end. I kicked the goal with my first kick in footy and joined a group, I think, of about 3,000 players that have done that. Very illustrious. But incredible memories. It was great. I remember Brent Riley kicked the ball to me just before halftime. That's when first kick in footy and luckily kicked it.
Were you a schoolboy celebrity as a being on an AFL list and then when you get to play?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I still remember, and I can't remember what this was for, but Craig Hutchinson rocking up to do an interview at Oberon with, I think, teachers at the time. And then all of a sudden the school's gone nuts because Hutch, I suppose, was starting to build some notoriety within the media industry, et cetera, et cetera. So he was there, and then in a public school like that, everyone knows all of a sudden, so everyone's gone nuts. It was a pretty crazy week. One that I've got fond memories of, that's for sure.
How soon do you think you found your level, you found your way? So you're in your second year. Once you're at the Crows, you're playing all the time, and this is a successful team.
Yeah, it is. It had been a successful team for a really long period of time, really well established. Sort of a transitioning period at the time because I'd come through with eight other players, which made it really easy to enjoy time in Adelaide because we were growing up together. My draft and then the following year's draft was another eight players from memory. So all of a sudden, within 2 years, a third of the list had changed over, and it really felt like even though the older players were still there and it's very much, their club, but you did feel ownership quite quickly because, wow, everyone's young. And there was a culture that was really ingrained around, wanting to become a leader, wanting to have influence early on, and that was something to aspire to and not put in the back of your mind. So I think I probably felt like I really belonged in sort of 2011 without getting huge midfield minutes, and then Neil resigned halfway through the season, I think it was. Mark Bickley comes in, and then I play the majority of the season. Rest of the season in the midfield and started to play some good footy.
The seminal moments, so I've got a couple, but obviously you've lived it. So the preliminary final against Hawthorn as just shocking underdogs in 2012, where for most of the afternoon you're right on the cusp of winning. Is that a big part of your Crows journey?
Yeah, it is. Remember it so vividly, given the season beforehand. And then you do feel, and especially in a town like Adelaide, you feel the emotional build-up, and we're seeing it now with some clubs, of when it does feel like change is going to happen. There's pressure on the coach. The whole building is a powder keg. It's starting to really intensify. And as a young player, you are oblivious to some of it because you don't understand the intricacies of footy clubs and how they truly work. So in my infancy, in terms of my career, but you understand that, things are happening. And then Sando comes in and everything just... a deep breath from everyone because it had just been building, and Neil had obviously been at the club for a long period of time. And then the shackles were sort of just released, and it was a really free-flowing sort of style of footy. Sando had obviously come from Geelong, so it was just about playing. And, it was a tight game. I think we were up by 15 at a different stage, and then I forget his last name, but Cyril something or other.
Yes.
Played pretty bloody well. And Cyril took it away from us. He obviously had an incredible career at the Hawks. So, that one, is very, very vivid still to this day.
2015 is an immense year, so there's a couple of aspects to this. How I think it's probably recognised that you nursed your secret about as well as the system allows. When did you know that you would move to Geelong?
The year before, probably halfway through 14, it was almost overnight that I was like, this is what I want to do. And at the time, James Podsadley comes to Adelaide And Pods for me was someone to really talk to about where I was at in life and confide in. And I remember wasn't 14, but it was certainly early 15 preseason around this is what I'm thinking. And straight away I just wanted to tell the club, to be honest, because there was just this burden of like, I just want to get it over and done with. And Pods was really strong, and I don't want to throw him in the scrap heap here, but he was really strong on you just we're not ready for it as an industry. And he was right. You've got to keep it to yourself. You can't tell anyone at the club. I remember seeing this with Gaz when he left Geelong and the intensity around it and him wanting to tell people, but you just can't. We're just not there as an industry. And I'm thankful for that guidance from Pods, who'd obviously experienced it with other players that he'd played with, that was we're not there yet, certainly not at the start of a season, let alone not halfway through a season, let alone the start of the year before anything had happened. So that was really good guidance. And then halfway through the year, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was it round 7 or 8 that Phil Walsh is tragically dies, is murdered? I remember, so that was a Thursday night. I met with Phil on the Wednesday that afternoon. I haven't spoken about this actually, because he said, I need to know. And Phil was one that you could actually sit down with and rightly or wrongly, I felt like he actually wouldn't tell the board, that he'd just go, this is what it is, it's fine. So I met with him at Henley Beach that afternoon, about 4:30. He had a green tea, loved his teas. Asked me what I was doing. I said, I want to go home. And he was, yep, okay, no worries. You know, like he was very pragmatic around that. So that was like, shit, all right, it's, you know, before the halfway mark or whatever week it was.
Around 11, yep.
It's a long way to go. This is what it is. So, all right, went home, told Mads, told Phil, and then go to bed. David Noble knocks on the door at 5:30 a.m. and he's dressed to go to work. What are you doing here? And he said, I need you to come in. Phil's been stabbed. And it was like, what? He said, Phil's dead. You need to come in. Phil's been stabbed. We need to get everyone, the group together. And it was like just this incredible whirlwind of emotion in a 24-hour cycle, less 12-hour cycle of telling the senior coach that I'm going to leave at the end of the season to he's being murdered that night. And now the next 3 hours will be getting everyone in as quickly as possible with all the leaders calling players to come in to explain the circumstances. So it was, it's still surreal to think back then because it just didn't feel real at the time, given sort of what the week has been like for me. Yeah. So, it was a crazy time.
How raw is the trauma of that still for you?
It doesn't feel like it just didn't feel real. Like it was obviously extremely traumatic for the players. Learned wonderful lessons from Phil, but it doesn't feel real because it was just like, this doesn't happen. So looking back, and that's why the group, you know, are still so tight with so many people from that time, because the only people you had to console with were those in the building. Because the beauty of, you know, playing in an interstate club is we had 60%+, maybe more, that were from different parts of Australia, went from Adelaide. So everyone was just super tight. The people that you spent time with were the footy club. So all of a sudden your senior coach is no longer there. It's not go home to mum and dad to try and make sense of this. It's come together as a playing group, because that's the only way that you can move forward, because that's the people that you know. That's the family, if you will. So, yeah, it was an extraordinary time. and one that still doesn't feel quite real.
When was the next time you told somebody from the Crows that you were going?
JJ and Lynchy, Tommy Lynch. So two really close mates. And they sort of knew, like it wasn't a, it didn't really even tell them. It was sort of, they just knew. And then there's the hard ones. It was almost romantic now. I think back of, I walked on the beach with Sloaney. That's how I told him at his place in Brighton. We had a bit of a hug. So I think you get it if you're from interstate, you understand, you know, what it's like to play interstate. And then, you know, for me, I'm 25. I've been with my then partner, now wife, Mads, for ages, and we were ready for that next stage in life. So, yeah, it's funny when you look back and you think about all those things. And it was a tough time because you're leaving behind so many wonderful people, a wonderful organisation, but it was time for me.
So home makes sense, but it is a new footy club. Did Geelong make sense?
Yeah, it did. It did. It was home, but the trust, I had just full faith in the organisation because it has proved so many times that you can trust the building and the organisation to compete, to put and give ourselves a chance to be in the arena. And that doesn't exist in every building. And that's Chris, that's the board, that was Brian and Hock at the time. And Hock obviously leaves and then comes back as CEO, but just, you know, such strong pillars in the organisation that for me it was a really simple decision to make.
Does winning the Brownlow change a footballer's journey?
Probably at the time you go, yeah, it's a great thing to achieve, but with the wisdom of longevity, you look back and go, well, the thing that you can't, and you don't get out of it, you don't get the stories that you get from quite clearly what a premiership would provide, you know. So, yep, it's terrific. But that season, it, you know, we'd played such great footy, it felt unfulfilled because we hadn't made it to the grand final. Western Bulldogs had won and we'd had some success against them, but we were smashed by Sydney the week before. So, It's wonderful, but it's probably something I think I'll appreciate greater as I finish up footy rather than right now. It doesn't mean as much now, and that's not disrespecting what it is, but it doesn't provide you the incredible camaraderie that you get from the great wins and the great stories that you get from that and the feeling of celebration that you can all enjoy together.
So that's the craving. Now, you'll do your press conference tomorrow, and it's easy to forecast that question. You deal with it at this time every year, the idea of the sand running through the hand and time and the quest to win a premiership. How have you, and you are so giving on this front, where are you in your craving for a premiership journey as we reach the final round of the home and away season?
Well, I've got two kids, so I'd happily give away one. And that would be my daughter because she's a menace. I hope she never hears this recording. It's in terms of professional career, it's all that matters. It really is. But I don't see it as something that's desperately needing to happen. Like I want it to happen, but at the same time, I've got the clarity of it's the process that gets you there. You've got to enjoy the journey to get there. You've got to enjoy the wins. Otherwise, what's the point? I don't think there's anything wrong with putting yourself and thinking through and dreaming of what that might be, that moment standing up there triumphant. But it's a wonderful character to have, having not achieved it and still playing, that the fire still burns so strongly.
Yep. And what do you do with the Superman syndrome? It feels to me like you've had years where on the outside it said it's time to put the cape on. You've had years where it said, Paddy, it's time to take the cape off. as a critical piece in a team contending, how do you rationalise what your responsibility is in that and what desperation might be, I suppose?
Yeah, I think it's controlling those emotions, and that's, you know, for all of us at the club, and everyone's playing for different reasons. Collectively, we have something that we need to come together for to achieve, but everyone has different things that spur them on quite clearly. So I'm hoping with the with years of experience comes that wisdom to be able to pull yourself back in that moment and control those emotions. And that has been no doubt a challenge at different stages in my career, because you just want it so much. But I feel like we are really, really balanced at the moment. And that's a really nice spot to be in. I feel like we have to be careful how I word it, but I don't think we have to totally nail everything that we're doing 100% for everything and the opposition to have an off game for us to win. Like, I feel like we've just got so many areas of our game that we've got going well, and we need to still build upon that. But it feels like, you know, the pieces are there in order to compete and give ourselves a bloody good shot. And whilst he's hammy, I think there's a guy that wears number five that I think he's primed for a very, very big September given the season that he's had. So I think Jez might have the cape on throughout September this year. He's had an incredible season.
Is the hammy a worry?
Well, yes, it is. You'd rather not it not happen, but my understanding is it's very much on the lighter side of things. So it's funny how things work out. But, you know, 10 days ago for us, we could happily keep playing through this bye. We don't need it. Then all of a sudden, you know, it's something like this happens, and it's like, well, you know what? The bye's not too bad.
Yep.
I think it's good. I think it's something that should stay in the schedule. And, Jez, you've got 3 weeks to get right, and no worries.
If we encapsulated it all, Paddy, it feels like you have lived as full of football experience as you could have for what we have spoken about, but there's also leading a player group through a pandemic, which could never have been imagined or forecast. For the idea of that kid standing in the wet alongside Trent Cotchin, to what it is, with all of its professional challenges and for all of its notoriety and leadership, how big has your football experience been, would you say?
It's been full. You know, if it was a cup, it's been full. My mantra has always been to, and this is from mum and dad, it's live life to the fullest, enjoy every element of it. There's so much negativity in the world that you could focus, but why focus on that when there's so much good? And that's the same with our industry. And I heard you talking last night on 360 around Ginnivan and the booing. And I think we've got to remind ourselves as a competition, as avid supporters of the great that is our game, and focus more on that than on the negative side this is going to make me feel good by putting someone else down. Well, focus on your team and what your players are doing well, and Isaac Heaney playing 150 games and the incredible season that he's had. Focus on him rather than on let's pull back this person. Like, I've always tried to do that throughout my career, focus on the really great stuff that happens, because for all the negatives that you go through, and there's plenty of that, you know, things that detract from being an AFL player and being involved in the industry, there's just so much great. There's so much fun that you can have. You can genuinely, with one conversation, you can change a young person's life that has always dreamt of walking out onto the MCG and playing. And you've just got to take the time sometimes to remind yourself what it was like to be a 7-year-old cheering on your team at Caninya Park. And, you know, that rams home when you have kids. And then, George loves Joel. Everyone loves Joel. Yeah. Typical. You know, one conversation with him and he's just beaming, you know. Like, so it's just, we've got to remind ourselves of the good of the game and how much enjoyment we can get out of it, and focus on that rather than the negative at times.
Do you think you're a football lifer? Do you imagine that you'll stay with it when your playing days are done?
I think so. It's for me, By the time that my contract ends in another few years, I'll have been playing for half my life. So I'll have been involved in the AFL system for half my life. 17 years drafted, 17 years playing. Yep. And before that, it was preparing to be drafted, to be good enough, you know. And I always thought that I was, you know, I was going to play, to be honest. So it's been a life full of AFL footy. It's always been there. So I don't think there's the ability just to step back from that when it's too great a place to enjoy. And, you know, these four walls of the Catter have been such an integral part of that, because I walk in and I still get goosebumps. It's still a great place to walk in, and it's just emotionally charged. It's not the roller coaster of the wins and losses, but it's a place where you walk in and everyone just wants to be the best version of themselves.
Yep. That's a good image. All right. 300 hoodies at the ready. We'll all be there in the Saturday twilight. I've actually got the day off calling, so I'll see you down there. Good luck for it. Enjoy.
Perfect. Thanks, Jared.